Good morning.
Hi, Doug.
Hi.
Susie Culver,
Susie.
ESPN. Let's start the day off with your aggressive play calling. Since you've done both, coach and quarterback, how would you describe the difference, just from an emotional standpoint, what it's like going for it on a fourth down from a play caller standpoint and for the quarterback in the huddle?
Well, from my standpoint, you get a little bit of that adrenaline going in those situations. You make sure that you're calling the right play, obviously, to put our team in a good situation on fourth down. And then my decision, my confidence level is I'm very confident in our guys that we can execute and stay on the field, and then trusting the quarterback, whether we're throwing it, that he's going to make the right decision with the ball and staying on the field. But those can, especially, maybe later in the game in the second half, they can definitely be a tense moment in those times.
Doug, what do you tell your players as far as just going through the week, trying to maintain a sense of normalcy with their routines and everything like that? How do you help them, and then the advice that you give them as they navigate?
Yeah, try to with the way we set the schedule up and just meetings and practice and everything, try to keep them away from as many of the distractions as possible. A lot of people, a lot of things this week they can pull you from just doing your job and preparing for the day. But, that's just part of the week. And I think coming into it, even last week, preparing the guys and sort of giving them a glimpse of what this week is all about, can help them sort of put things to the side and just focus on task.
Doug, Tom Pelissero, NFL Thanks, Network. Tom. You mentioned in the pool report yesterday that the second half of practice after the long halftime was a little sloppy. How did you address that with the players, and what do you hope to see these next few days to let you know that they're ready?
Yeah, a couple things from that is, number one, it's been a couple days since we've been on the practice field, so it's typical that you're going to have, not quite as crisp a practice. But, for me, it was just about going around talking to the leadership of the guys. It wasn't get the team together, get the coaches together, and start, browbeating everybody. I mean, we're so late in the season now that we understand how to practice. But just making sure that we understand the importance of one. That's why I did the break. Was to put us in that situation. Now we understand it, so it's a very teachable moment for our guys, our coaches, and how to prepare for the second half of a football game.
Doug, sorry. Doug, what has Jason Peters meant to the rest of the offensive linemen ever since he went down with the injury? And whenever he does decide to not play anymore, in your opinion, does he have a future in coaching if that's the route he wants to go?
Jason, the moment he could get back into the building, he was around the offensive line every single day, and all of our injured guys are. And he's been a mentor. Obviously, to Big V. He's coached him up, on and off the football field. He's around him now more these past few weeks in practice and obviously out here in the meetings and things like that. But he's just been a great asset to that offensive line as a group, big leader, obviously, of that unit. But, I still think he has a few years left to play before he steps away. As far as coaching goes, I don't know. That's something that, I haven't talked to him about it, but maybe he wants to go down that path. I think he could, having played the position, could be a good coach, if he chooses to do that.
Hey, Doug, at team meetings, what's the story behind finishing them talking about ice cream?
Say that one more. I didn't hear the first part. I was
at the team meetings. What's the story about finishing them talking about ice cream?
Talking about ice cream?
Ice cream.
Oh, I love ice cream. I mean, can't you tell? Can't you tell? No, it's just something I've came up with, just a saying, just a phrase. We do have serve ice creams at our snack night before the game, and I love ice cream. And I don't want to stay in that team meeting too long because it's over there melting. So I throw it out there every week. Nothing really behind it.
Hey, Doug.
ice cream aside.
Thank you.
When you took over, you kept several coaches from the Chip Kelly staff. What was that situation like? Did you know these guys at all? Did you have to get to know them before you made that decision? How did that all work?
Yeah. Well, the only one that I knew was Deuce because I'd worked with him before and played with him before. The other ones, as I was preparing and putting a staff together and thinking of potential candidates, these guys came highly recommended by other coaches around the league, and so it was. I was excited to get to Philadelphia to talk to these guys, to talk to Jeff Stoutland and Dave Phipp, and Corey Unlin had just been there about a year, and Justin Peel and these guys, and wanted to talk to them and see how and if they could fit into what I was bringing to Philadelphia, and in Phipp's case and really in Stoutland's case, these were two men that came highly recommended to me.
Hey Doug, you said the other day that your role as a player was to be a career backup. I wonder at what point during your career did you accept that role? And as a coach, how important is it to have players who understand and embrace their roles?
Well, I think after the first couple of seasons, you kind of see how your role is going to go in the league. Do you want to play? Yeah, you want to play, and you want to be out there on the field. But especially at the quarterback position, you know there's only going to be one guy. And in my case, I understood I was on two teams really that. And really the third, but a couple of teams where the starter was already in place, and that was Dan Marino and Brett Favre. And you're not gonna beat those two guys out. So, and then the third one was Philadelphia, where I started, and then Donovan was the guy we drafted and took over. So once you after a couple of years, you kind of embrace that role, and then you become the best role player you can, situational player, and it's no different. If you're a core special teams player and you're a backup safety or a backup linebacker, running back, you just understand that role, you embrace it, and then you become a great teammate from there.
Doug, I had read that you spent part of the offseason after your first season as coach getting more comfortable with data and advanced statistics, and I was wondering what caused that and how did you set about getting more comfortable?
Well, I think we have a great analytics staff in Philadelphia, and it's something that I wanted to get more comfortable just understanding the data and what types of data that I could use in helping the team win. I do feel like it can be overwhelming at times, trying to crunch all those numbers, and I want to kind of sift through everything and find the ones that are right for the football team. And so I spent some time in the offseason trying to figure that out and what worked for us and what worked for me, and then embracing that and using it this fall.
Doug, Kevin Walsh, NBC10, Boston. A constant to the Patriots' success, there have been two constants, Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. Can you envision a similar scenario for yourself and Carson Wentz over 18 years with a side of Nick Foles?
Gosh, I'd love to. And I've, even in some of the quiet moments, I try to envision that, in this league, if you have a quarterback and you do things right and you surround him with talented players and coaches, you can have a long career, in this business and have the success that those two gentlemen have had. And a lot of respect for those two and what they've meant for this league. And obviously, that's something that I think that, with myself and Carson and the guys we have around him, could possibly happen there in Philadelphia, yes.
Hey, Doug, what went into the decision to go with no pads this week, and did you notice any drop-off in intensity without them yesterday?
No, we had a great week last week, honestly, back in Philly. Had all our prep last week, and this is about just fine-tuning, keeping the guys fresh for Sunday. We had a great practice yesterday. Obviously, from a tempo standpoint, guys were flying around and doing what I've asked them to do this week. And so I just decided to back off this week and keep them as fresh for Sunday.
Doug, Bob Glauber from Newsday. What was your experience like in 99 as a quarterback in Philadelphia, playing for a fan base that wasn't quite patient with you, and where do you process that, and where do you put that as you were considering the job? Was there any reluctance on your part to be the head coach in a market like that?
Well, going back to 99, you know, that was Coach Reed's first year in Philly, and I just remember that, you know, the roster turnover, he'd made a lot of changes that year in the roster. You know, about half of that team was basically gone, and so it was kind of a rebuild, you know, starting over, and so we were young and brought in a lot of free agents and trying to piece it together on offense, you know, and we had a really good defense, however, those couple years that I was there, and yeah, you know, the fans are passionate. We heard it, I heard it, but it had really no bearing on my decision to come back to Philadelphia. You know, I really love the city and love the fans. I think that's I love it at the Link when they're out there and they're crazy and cheering us on and you know, they're going to let us know one way or the other, well, if we're doing a good job or not. So, but it had no bearing on the decision to come back.
Hey, Coach. Stacey Dales, NFL Network. Could you speak on, you've had a pretty darn good run defense this year. Could you speak on the Patriots running backs and how they utilize them out of the backfield and how that wears down a defense? And then the second part, I suppose we could all learn something about adversity given the way you've handled it this year. Could you speak on that?
Sure. With the running back situation that the Patriots have, these guys are dynamic. They're explosive with the ball in their hands. One thing they do a really good job of is just moving them around. I mean, these guys motion out of the backfield, and they're running different types of routes out of the backfield, lining up in empty, and just they're quick, explosive guys that. You gotta tackle. You gotta get them on the ground. They make some dynamic plays, and they can stretch the field. You're seeing these guys, you know, run go routes, run takeoffs on linebackers, and double moves and things like that. So it's a challenge to corral these guys. And then the second part, you know, with the resiliency of this football team, you know, I just think it's a credit to the guys, leadership of the team. You know, when our guys, Pro Bowl guys start falling and guys that you've invested maybe even long-term contracts to, you know, the guys are going to be on your team and they're veteran players and they're helping us put all this together. It's tough. But, you know, for me it was about I got to coach the next guy. I got to get the next guy ready. You know, we hate that a guy like Jason Peters is not with us, or Darren Sproles, or Maragos, the guys that we talk about all the time, Jordan Hicks, Carson. But you know, tomorrow's coming, and we got to get ready for tomorrow. And we got to get the next player ready to go tomorrow, and the next day, and the next. And that's kind of been our demeanor. That's kind of been my mindset, my message to the team all season. It's been about us, you know, all year. And nothing ever matters. Nothing else matters.
Doug, down here. Take us through what's going to be going through your head the night before the game. And where do you want your players' heads at on Saturday night before the biggest game of their lives?
Well, for me, hopefully it's like I was going into the Minnesota game. You know, I'm at peace. I can sleep well. I know the team's prepared. You know, we've exhausted everything in practice, study, the film, the whole thing. So you, at that point, you just, you know, you try to get as much rest as you can the night before, kind of free your mind just a little bit. And the players the same way. You know, I know they're going to be anxious and ready to go. You know, Sunday's a long day, and you know, we just have to. You just gotta control. It's hard, but you control your emotions. You just tell them. Say, listen, you're ready to go. You know, you just go cut it loose, play loose, play like you have been all season long, and we'll see what happens. You know, Sunday afternoon. But yeah, for me, there'll be a piece of just understanding that the guys are ready to go and I'm ready to go, and we're just waiting for kickoff.
Coach, having played 4 years under Mike Sherman, I was just wondering what kind of influence he had on the coach that you've become today, and just curious to know your reaction when you learned that he was going to be coaching in the CFL with Montreal.
Mike, when I was a player there in Green Bay, I had a great relationship with Mike, and he was really one of the guys that was instrumental in when I did retire, of just sort of saying, hey, you know, you need to see if coaching is in your future, meaning you got to understand it. Do you like to teach? Do you like to, you know, teach the X's and O's and be around the guys? And he was very instrumental in sort of shaping my path a little bit, you know, my last year there in Green Bay. And you know, he was a dynamic, run game guy. You know, he really prided himself in the run game and some of the things that we did there in Green Bay. And, Mike's a guy that he listens to his players. He understands the dynamic of the locker room. I mean, he's going to do great wherever he ends up, obviously. And wish him the best. But he had a big impact on the path that I chose, you know, getting into coaching.
Two more questions. Good morning, sir. Here,
good morning. Winter
Schramm for Sportax from Argentina. This will be the sixth rematch in Super Bowl history, and in four or five rematches, the first team that won the first Super Bowl won also the second Super Bowl. And also, teams wearing white jerseys have won 12 of the last 13 Super Bowls.
We better change jerseys.
What do you think about these numbers? Do you believe in them? What can you tell the Eagles fans? Thank you.
I mean, if color dictates the outcome of the game, then we're in trouble. It's an honor to play in this game. Our guys will be prepared, obviously, and it doesn't matter what color we're wearing, they're wearing. You know, we just have to go, you know, execute and execute the game plan, obviously, and that's why we're practicing this week, and my job is to prepare our football team and get ready for a great opponent on Sunday.
Doug, you mentioned your familiarity with Deuce Staley. You were with him as a player. You were with him as an offensive assistant, and now you're with him as his boss. How have you seen him change or mature as a person and, I guess, as a coach, since you've been with him twice as a coach? And can you address the job he's done this year, especially with, I think he's coached six different running backs that have played significant roles in your offense?
Yeah. Deuce has done a great job, you know, for me. He definitely, kind of like myself, he leans on his experiences as a player to be able to coach and teach, and because he's been there, done that, out there in the games. And, you know, the running back coach position, it takes a special coach. I don't think that just anybody can do that. You got to have a presence about yourself. You got to have a way about yourself. You got to be able to communicate with different personalities in that room. And in our case, we've got a couple of starters in that room, and he's been able to really shape them and mold them and get them to buy into what we're doing offensively. Their roles, each one has a role, and he does a great job with that. And he knows when to. He knows when to be hard on them. They all take coaching extremely well, and he's been a big asset. He's smart. He understands not only the run fits, the lanes, but he also understands protection. And that's something when we had some young guys, and you know, with Corey and Wendell and some of the younger players, and then when Jay comes in and teaching LeGarrette, all of our schemes and stuff, he was able to kind of break it down and dissect it so they could understand it. But, yeah, he's been a big asset to that room and to the running backs and to me. Okay. Thank you, guys.
we go.